Trish and Nicole and their expert guests are here to answer all your burning questions about aesthetics procedures. Candid discussions and stories of the latest trends and greatest gadgets. From dry vagina to frozen faces, Aesthetics Uncensored, where nothing is off limits.
It's Trish Hammond here, and I'm joined with Nicole Montgomery today, and we will be speaking to the delightful Dr. Nick Davies. Now, Dr. Davies is the director of ND Skin, and he's based on the Central Coast in New South Wales, and today we're going to talk all about hair restoration using the Neograft. So welcome.
Hi guys, how are you?
Great.
Thanks.
How are you, Nicole?
I'm good. I'm loving this topic because I love all of Dr. Nick's results.
Yes, and I love just talking about, the hair and no hair, really. So, yeah, I'm excited about this. And I don't know much about hair restoration, but I'm really excited to learn about it today. So tell us, first of all, so what is the Neograft? So Neograft is the machine that you do hair restoration with, hey?
Yeah, sure. So the Neograft is a machine that I purchased fairly recently, which just really helps to, to get you a really good result from hair transplants, really, essentially. I guess it's quite tricky to explain, but the machine itself has like a little drill bit on it, and you're able to suck the implants from the back of the head and then put them into wherever we're balding or where the hair's lacking. So it's just a way of doing things that I find is easy, because I like things that are quite easy and that gives you really good results.
Because in the olden days, I remember my uncle having, before he had the wig, he had a hair transplant, and actually did two different ones. One that they actually cut out a whole part of his skin at the back of his head. And yeah. Kind of repositioned it, which was weird, and it just grew quite.
So there definitely is room for that, which is called FUT. So that's like strip surgery, where you would take a strip of hair from the back, like he's had done, and then transplant those hairs. Now I don't do FUT. I do FUE, which is what the Neograft is. FUT is a lot more surgical. But yeah, there is definitely place for that. But I think more recently, there's a lot of clinics are turning to FUE. It's potentially a little bit safer. You don't get that linear scar at the back, like a smiley face scar at the back. Instead, you get very tiny scars. And over time, as the other hairs grow through that, then it becomes really unnoticeable. So I think that's one of the benefits of having the Neograft or having FUE.
All right, so say I'm like, and I know this is for men and for women, and like, well, myself as an example, say for example, I tend to, like, I haven't got a bald patch, but I kind of have really thinning, fine hair as a top, and I've actually had it like that since I was really young, and I've always been really phobic about it, but there's never, I think it's called a trichologist or something like that. I don't even know if that name's right, but anyway,
yeah.
Sounds like gynecologist, but for the hair anyway. And they were sort of like, yeah, there's nothing that you can do. So if I had that issue, so I could actually come and have a Neograft treatment. So what would you do? Like, would you shave that area first, or how does it work?
Like, being a doctor, you have to look at the whole picture. So it's not really like you just come in to see Dr. Nick and then before you know it, you're having a hair transplant or surgery. Because we have to think about why is the man going bald? Why is the woman going bald? Like, there's certain things that we know that we can help, not just surgically, but medically. So quite often when the patient comes in and they have a consult, they'll end up being put on some sort of medication, which helps. Because often you don't just jump straight to surgery. That's the last resort, because at the end of the day, you only really want to do that once. You want to give the patient a chance really to have some medications, which can often help and often take them to a point years down the line before they need to go down the transplantation or the surgical route. So it's not like you would immediately go for that. So often people do, and they just want the results. They want to do that. They're not interested in the medications, but I have to kind of talk them around to, even if you do have a hair transplant, more often than not, especially for men, we do have to give them some medication to stop the hairs that haven't been transplanted from falling out. And quite often that's an education thing, like to teach the patient that before going straight in for the surgical method.
Yeah, right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Although I'd be the one like, yeah, nah, just give me surgery and make it happen now. I want that quick fix. So what's the process like? Say, for example, if you know, all other avenues have been, this is the option for you. What's the process from a patient perspective? Like, do you need to, is there anything to do to prepare before you have a procedure done? And like, how long does it take and all that sort of thing?
Well, look, it's, to put it in a simplified way, so it's a long day, put it that way. Like the procedure takes a full day, and it's you either love it or you hate it, because it's quite a tiresome day. So patient turns up very early. I get them to come in at maybe 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30. And yeah, let's just take a man, because most of the procedures that we do are in men. So more than 80% in my clinic. So he comes in, we sign the consent forms, I give a prophylactic antibiotic, offer the patient something like Valium, maybe Panadine Fort or an Endone for pain, Valium to calm them down. Then once we're ready to get going and all the equipment set up, because there's a lot of equipment going on, so often the night before we'll set up, and I work with a team of at least two technicians and my nurse as well. So a patient comes in, we shave the back of the head, which is called the donor site. The back of the head is where we get the harvest from. So if you think of the balding man, where the last place in the head for the hair to fall out is the back. So it's the back of the scalp. So that's where we take the hair from. Okay, so once we've shaved the back of the head, we can then lie the patient face down on the bed. And then we give a ring block of anesthetic usually. So we give anesthetic in a ring form around the harp or the site where we're going to take all the hairs, and we let that go numb. After we've thoroughly cleaned the area, we start to use the neograft to essentially drill with a vacuum each individual follicle. So on the end of the neograft, there's a small circular drill bit, which is about 0.9 to 1 millimeter in diameter. I've got a foot pedal. So as I press the foot pedal, the drill bit drills around the hair follicle, goes down a certain depth, and then the vacuum sucks that little follicle into a canister. And once we've got to a few hundred of them, bear in mind we could be doing like a few thousand, we empty the canister and the technician or the nurse starts to sort through them and just separate the follicles into, say, like a follicle with one hair, a follicle with two hair, and a follicle with three plus. And then, you know, that procedure could probably, that part of the procedure can last maybe 2 to 3 hours. We have a lunch break, we can set the patient up, give them a bit of a rest. It's a long time to sit on your front, you know, going through all this. Then this is the part where the procedure starts to get a bit easier. So we flip the patient over and now they're lying on the front on the bed. I've actually got Netflix on the TV on the wall. So once we've anesthetized, say we were doing the receding hairline and we've got that all nice and numb, the patient can kind of relax. There's a lot going on still, because that's when the implantation starts, and we've got potentially me on one side, technician and my nurse on the other side. And then we start to just individually put the hairs into where we have decided that their new homes are going to be. So it takes a long, long time. It's a long day. It's a bit futile. Certain parts of the procedure I love, and then other parts I don't love so much. But I think for me, what really, the clincher for me is just seeing the results, because it is life-changing at the end of the day. Because a lot of these people, like, they're at home, they've told me they're scared to go out. I had a lady who she actually quit her job because she didn't want to face going into work every day because of the receding hairline that she's had. I've had men coming in saying that they always wear a hat. They never go out socially without wearing a hat. It just gets to them, it gets them down so much. So being able to change that is the most rewarding thing. Like, that's why I got into aesthetics in the first place. Like, I'm an injector as well, and being able to give your patients their confidence back, that's just so fantastic for me.
I agree, and the whole industry is full of like people can have treatments to fix things that have caused them grief for all their life, and a lot of people don't even know that this stuff is available. Like, you know, you hear it time and time again, and it's life changing because you feel good about yourself, and it just changes your whole, you know, aspect on life. And look, going back to that, I was going to ask you about, you know, whether they can watch TV or something while you're doing it. So it sounds like it doesn't sound like the most uncomfortable thing. Like, it's not like you've got to be doing anything actively. You're just lying there and you've got your thing. So just, I wanted to clarify, when you say like you shave that bit, so the reason you have to shave the hair is because you kind of pull the follicle out from, like, you pull it all out completely. Is that right? Like, will that ever grow back?
If you think about it, we've got essentially binoculars on, so we're looking at the follicles in a magnification of between 2 and 4 times. So we have to shave the hair to like a number zero so that we can, you don't want a hair to kind of flap around when you're trying to drill through, because you have to also just drill very precisely in the same angle as the hair is growing out, or else you transect the hair and then the follicle is not going to grow. So it's essentially dead. So that's very important as well, because we want to get the best rate or the most viable follicles so that, you know, they get more at the end of the day. So shaving the head, it's impossible to do it without it at the back. And when you say, will it grow back? So if you imagine a square, say a square centimeter, we're only going to take maximum 20% of the hairs. So because we're only drilling, say, a 1 millimeter follicle, when the rest of the hairs start to grow through, you don't see those little scars, which are probably like, you know, half a millimeter. They're absolutely tiny by the time, you know, they shrink.
Yep.
So, Dr. Nick, I want to ask you, can you see my screen?
Yes.
If you Google bad hair plugs, I mean, the word plugs doesn't sound good in any case, that you'll find images like this, which look terrible. But have you ever seen someone in real life that has these hair plugs?
I've seen a couple of people, because they've approached me after, you know, they've had a bodgy.
I don't even understand it. I think this is worse than having a hair plug is worse than being bald.
Yeah, what you're showing me looks like the old style of what they used to do. So what they used to do is kind of like a punch biopsy. So, you know, when you go to the doctor, or you might not know, but I do a lot of skin cancer work, and we use those punch biopsies. So they're a lot bigger diameter. And what they used to do, this is how they first started to do it, is they would just punch some hairs from the back of the head and then just punch them into the front, and it just looks terrible. It's so obvious. And yeah, but I once you've done that, I think that's really, really tricky to fix.
Yeah. I think that it's scary, the word plugs, and I guess it's so important for people to, when they're doing their research, to understand the difference, because you've said FUE, FUT, and then I'm now saying hair plugs.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these different techniques. How do you know which is the best?
Well, there isn't the best, I guess. You can't really tell what is the best technique. I guess you have to really, like, the patient, when they're going to decide to have this done and fork out what they're going to pay, because it's an expensive procedure, they really need to research where they're going and who's going to do it. I hear a lot of stories of patients going to the clinic and not being a doctor who is consulting them in the first instance, and that's a bit scary, really.
Yeah.
I think it should definitely be doctor driven. I think it would be very difficult for it to be a team of four doctors to do the procedure. That's why we use technicians. But yes, the technicians that I'm using, they've been doing this for longer than I've been doing medicine. You know, these guys are extreme. Like, I wouldn't do it without the specific people that I use. And that's really important to me as well, because that's going to provide the best results and make it safe as well.
Yeah,
it's an art, that's for sure. There's an art to it. Like, it's not just I've seen some of the results and they're just astounding. Like, the fact that, you know, you can't even tell, and you've just had your, you know, if you're a man with the receding hairline, you can actually just, you know, you can't even tell anything at all, except that it looks like your hair's grown in spots that it wasn't before.
I was just going to say there as well, like, that's definitely something that drew me towards this as well. Not just the fact that it's life-changing results, but the artistry in terms of, you know, designing a hair and showing the patient and working with the patient, saying, like, if we could give you this kind of style, because we often draw on when they come in for the consult, and I take some photos and we can look through it together and decide, is this the way, you know, you would like it to look? And a few years ago, I had no idea about men's hairline and women's hairline, but it's actually quite fascinating to get into and know what's natural and what to look out for.
Yeah.
Have you ever had it done? Do you, like,
have I ever had it? Like, hair no.
Not
yet. I've got a bit of a receding hairline probably, but I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah. So many women though over the age of 40 who have unfortunately plucked away their eyebrows through their teenage years and as a young adult. Can you do eyebrows?
Yes, you can. I've only done a couple, but yeah, so far I've had pretty good results.
And where's the donor site for the eyebrows?
Same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about for, like, really hairy Italian men who have hair everywhere except their head?
Do you know what's really strange about the whole thing is that when you put hair from the back of the head onto, say, the beard, so you can do beard as well, or the eyebrow, it will grow like the hair at the back of the head up until maybe a couple of years, and then it will start to behave more like a beard hair and get thicker, or an eyebrow hair and get a little bit thicker and not grow as fast. I don't think, well, as far as I know, anybody knows why that happens, but it's pretty cool.
I reckon there's going to be a big market in years to come, you know, like, because everyone's getting, you know, Brazilians and stuff like that and getting it lasered. So if you want to grow your boobs back, maybe in years to come, there'll be a market for that as well.
I have to say I've never done that treatment, but you never know. I think, like, the overall demand for it is just, it's insane. I think it's definitely a huge market. And over COVID, you know, I've been trying to keep in touch with my patients and you know, just the people that are contacting me through Instagram and the website. And yeah, definitely a lot of people that are out there and they're ready to come in and they're ready to have treatments done. So yeah, it's an exciting space to be in.
Yeah, it's almost like I didn't remember when injectables first started, but it's almost like people first started getting injectables, it's like the same thing. Like, people are discovering that now you can get, you know, your hair restored, and whether it's your eyebrows, because like you said, you know, when I was younger, we used to pluck them. The thinner they were, the more fashionable they were, which means they don't grow back. So we started getting cosmetic tattooing, but then it looks blue and stuff like that. So, like, hair transplant would be great for the eyebrows, but you can do beards and where else? I mean, I guess that's probably it, really. Hey, beards.
That's probably it. I think it's, you know, it's always evolving as well. Who knows where this is going? I think, like, one amazing thing that the patients reflect on as well is that the downtime is really, it's if you work from home, you could go back to work the next day. And if you work in, like, say, an office in a clean environment, you could go back to work 7 to 10 days. So there's just such a minimal downtime.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So you have the treatment done, and is there any aftercare, like straight after? Of course, you're gonna, you know, you need the meds to wear off. But apart from that, can you just live like normal? You're not going to wash your hair, I guess, for a little while.
Not till day three. So it's really important, as you can imagine, not to rub the hair. And quite often we'll give the patient one of those, you know, the travel neck pillows.
Mm-hmm.
That you would use on a plane, so that we sleep in that upright for the first 3 days, and that just avoids you sort of rolling over onto the donor site. Is going to be fine because it will just be scabs,
mm-hmm.
but where the little implants, they are very fragile, so we need to be very careful for the first few days to a week, and we need to keep them moist with like a sterile saline solution so that we're not causing thick scabs that might end up in an infection. That'd be the most worrying thing, would be an infection, because you don't want to get all your hard work, you know, undone. I often give, certainly the bigger cases and the older patients, I'll give them antibiotics to take home as well to, you know, mitigate that.
So when you say the bigger cases, like how much can you do? Like, and I know if you're talking thousands of hair, but I don't really understand it in as far as hair at a time, but spatially, like.
It's more grafts rather than hairs. So that's another thing that I've found just with a lot of patients come to me and they say, oh, I went to another clinic and they said they could do 3,000 plugs. And I'm like, okay, right, fair enough. What does that actually mean? So a lot of clinics will say, or will charge by follicle. And then there are other clinics who will charge by hair, which is really quite a clever marketing way to do it, I guess, because each follicle can have can have more than three hairs on it. Most of them are 1 and 2 hairs, but they might go up to 3, 4, sometimes 5. So if you can imagine, if you're saying to people, I can give you X amount of hairs, like how many follicles is that? Do you know what I mean? It's a little bit disingenuous. Mm-hmm. But just going back to the original question, I think pushing 2,500, maybe 3,000 grafts would be the biggest that I would go for, because if you're thinking about that donor site and only taking 20% of the hairs, if you start going above that, that's when you're going to start making the back of the head maybe a little bit more or less dense than it should be, and that can be noticeable. So I certainly wouldn't go above 3,000 grafts, but that would be the biggest procedure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, say with a receding hairline and you fix it, but then the other hair behind it, can that still recede and then you just...
So that takes you back to the medication question, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking particularly about in men what happens at the follicle level with the testosterone. So quite often we want to give the males a testosterone blocker to stop a process going on that causes miniaturization and the follicles to fall out. So you're dead right, and I have seen some horror cases where people have had great transplant at the front and then there's just a big gap all the way back to the donor site because all the other hair's fallen out. So
it happened on Beauty and the Geek.
Yeah, that's why
Beauty and the Geek, and he had like this sort of hairline here and then huge bald area and then hair here. It was
I don't think that was, I think that was just his hair though.
No, he said that he had hair restoration, that he was conscious of going balding and he really wanted to fix it, and then he had like some tiny sporadic random little bits, yeah. But it was really defined here and then very sparse and then hair.
Ooh,
he was so young too, in his early 20s.
That really highlights the fact of doing a really good history and examination though, because you want to really, like, that could be something that is quite easily fixed with medications. I don't know that case, but certainly when they come in, we do talk about maybe getting a blood test. All women would get a blood test in my clinic because there's just too many. It's just so much more complicated. Whereas for men, if I know it's just male pattern baldness and I'm pretty sure about that, I won't always do blood tests. But we do talk about that, things like thyroid, iron deficiency, vitamin deficiencies. Sometimes it's best just to get a blood test just to check for that as well. But you are right, like that can happen, and that is one of the risks of losing the hair in between the front and the donor sites. But often that comes from maybe a poor history at the start of it, or the patient not taking the medications. So that's why I always hammer home and have regular follow-ups of the patient to make sure that they're taking their meds to stop that.
And I guess it's one of those things where it's a commitment. Like if you want to look youthful all the time, you may have to, go back and have a touch up. Is that right? Or would you do everything in one session, or could you just
it's not something that you want to have done many times, and you certainly wouldn't be going above 3 times. But you're right, you could easily plan it. So it all depends on the patient as well. The patient might only be bothered at this moment in time about the receding hairline. So you could fix the receding hairline with maybe 800 to 1,000 grafts, and that would leave you plenty of wiggle room for them to come back 5-10 years later. And then as the crown starts to get bald, then you could make that more dense. So I have planned that with a lot of patients as well, just thinking into the future.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a preference to shampoo and conditioner and massaging and combing? Are you allowed to comb?
Are you talking about immediately after?
Yes, like after you've had the procedure, I would assume that you wouldn't.
If you think about the graft, they're not long enough to comb.
No, but you know how they say that combing and brushing stimulates the scalp? So maybe not immediately after, but like ongoing.
Yeah, I think
after it.
Probably the thinking behind that is to increase blood supply, like, because that's what the thinking behind the other alternative therapies are, is as well. There's all sorts of things that people are doing now.
Are you going to bring out a Dr. Nick shampoo and conditioner range?
I've got something in mind at the moment, because it's not to do with shampoo and conditioner. I've done a lot of research about the supplements and the supplement industry in terms of hair, and 90% of the stuff that I've seen, when you look at the scientific papers and the research, it's frighteningly nonsense. Like a lot of this stuff.
I take zinc for hair. They said it says hair and nails on the bottle.
You do? Yeah, but do you have a zinc deficiency though?
Probably not, but I do get a dry scalp. I do get psoriasis. It's so frustrating. So I've got too much hair. I'm brushing it and taking
my... You can become a hair donor.
Yeah, I probably don't have a deficiency. I don't know.
A lot of these things are about deficiencies though, like, and they're just putting vitamin D and various other the marketing is just amazing. But it would be good to come up with something that that actually works, that's not a medication. And there is a few things out there, so yeah, maybe I've got a lot going on.
Now that you've spoken about vitamin D, sorry, it makes me want to have my little vitamin D spray, which I'm just about to do.
Oh my goodness. Mm. Could you imagine though, being really young? I couldn't imagine it. Alfie started balding when he was like 19.
Really?
That's so young.
But you wouldn't do a hair replacement on like you couldn't do it on a completely bald head, could you?
It's too far gone.
No.
No. And you wouldn't even, because like some men have what I call the skirt, when you've got just the hair around here, like a skirt.
Yes.
Could you still fill it up a little bit?
It would be very difficult, because if you think about it, there's only a finite supply of hair. So at the back where the donor site is, that is, you can't make new follicles. This is something you have to teach patients as well. Like you can't take a medication to make you have more follicles, to grow more hair. You've got a finite supply. So once you've taken them out, if you waste them, they're gone. And if you put them in, you've just got to put them very, you've got to think about where you put them.
Yeah.
You often only get one chance.
It's obviously like, because I know the training to learn how to do it is intense, and I guess you're probably learning all the time. But can you tell us a little bit about like what's like, how did you get good at it?
I think you just have to, I've always been pretty good with my hands, which is why I like, you know, injectable, cosmetic injectables and skin cancer. So I've always been very hands-on, and definitely with, I can't speak for the other ways to do it, but with the NeoGraft, the handpiece, there's definitely a knack in the way that you hold it, because you have to get the angle right. You have to coordinate the angle with pressing the suction pedal and keeping your hand steady to go in. It's just practice. Like anything that you do, the more times you do it, the better you get. So, and literally you have a lot of time for practice, because that each case is going to take like 6, 8, 12 hours. So
wow. And so with the patient, so they come and they have their treatment, and then they go home, you sleep with the pillow under your neck, like when you have a boob job. And so you sleep with the pillow under your neck, and then and you can't wash your hair for 3 days, but then how long before you can start to, you know, like shampoo it and you know, be normal with it and go out in the sun and all that sort of thing? Is there a downtime, say, that's not that you can't go to work, but where you have to be uber careful?
Yeah, so as I said, like the first few days are definitely the most, where they're the most fragile. And what will happen is you'll develop like sort of small scabs at the front. So where the new hairs have been placed, you know, because if you can imagine it, you have to make a hole, an incision, where you're going to put the follicle. So you will get clotting and dry blood there. And then at the back of the head, which is normally the most tender part, you're going to just see little red dots, which will crust over and scab. But generally, like, people are pretty good in terms of the recovery time. Within a week, you're back to doing most of the things that you're doing. I mean, you don't want to do any exercise for a good few weeks afterwards, because you wouldn't want to, you spent all this money, you don't want to jeopardize things. So as long as you're sensible, it's fine. Mm-hmm. You certainly don't want to get sun on them for quite a long time, because they are liable to burn. And then again, you're going to waste it. You're wasting all your money. So we have a post-care booklet that we give the patients, which is like 24 to 48 hours, first 3 days, first week, first 3 months. So you get all that info, or you should, afterwards. So most patients are pretty fine with that.
I'm going to ask a really dumb question, because so that you get it even when you're doing it, do you go one side, one hair, or do you map them all out? Like, do you put dots and map them out where they're going to go before, or is that?
We use a surgical marker pen to draw the hairline. So say we're talking about a receding hairline, because it's the most common procedure. We'll mark the hairline all the way along. Mm-hmm. And then we will just in a random fashion put the incisions, because you don't want to have a hairline that's completely straight. If you look in the mirror and you look at your natural hairline, it's more of a kind of random zigzag pattern, very gently all the way along. Whereas if you just did a straight line, like, and I've seen this before, if it's just straight all the way around, it just looks very strange, very bizarre. Mm-hmm. So it's random pattern, and we try and get them very tightly like packed so that you get a better density. And what we often do is we'll put the follicles with one hair at the front, and then the next couple of rows will go to two, and then the three after that. So we work the way back in the density.
Yeah, right. So actually about that follicle, so basically what you're saying is you can actually just pull the like one a follicle, like the hairs in one, well, I don't know, like you pull one follicle out and it's got like three or four hairs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So I guess that's what makes thick hair. People with thick hair got
more. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Wow. So interesting.
I know. I never knew any of this until fairly recently when I started to get into this, because in general practice, like my background being a GP, I certainly can't remember an hour of teaching about like baldness or how to treat it, even the medications, all that I've had to really go out and learn it myself.
Yeah. And is there like a minimum amount of hair restoration that someone can have done, or like
a minimum amount? How do you mean?
Like, is there
just to increase density for, you know, like if it, the hair's like only a little bit thin?
Oh, right. Okay.
You do like 500. I don't even know.
Yeah, you could, but that would probably be a case where you might want to try medication or some of the alternative therapies first, because at the end of the day, you know, it's, even if you do a small case, it's still very expensive and time consuming and the downtime, etc. So you might want to just try some medication or alternative therapies first.
And how long do you reckon after it's done that people will see the results? Because obviously you're going to have, you know, scabs. When you put it in, there's not, yeah, you're going to have a few little scabs, but when you put it in, obviously you can't see it until the hair grows, eh? So it's only going to take as long as the hair takes to grow?
So I will tell my patients, and you've got to be realistic so that they don't freak out, that most of the little follicles are going to release the hair within the first, say, few months. So if you can imagine the follicle is attached to the hair, that follicle can get shocked when you transplant it, and it will just release the hair. So they freak out and they're like, oh my God, I just spent all this money, now the hair's all falling out. Cause it looks great after say 2 weeks and you've got that really amazing density. So you have to just hold their hand and say, look, it probably can lie dormant for a few months, maybe 4, even 6 months. And then it will start to grow, and you'll see that kind of little stubble effect after, say, 6 months at the earliest. So really preparing them not to see any results for 9-12 months down the line. So it's a slow burner.
Yeah. And I guess that's where the benefit of photos come in, because sometimes you forget what you look like before, but then if you look at the photo before and you look at afterwards, a year later, you might think, oh my God, wow, what a difference, because you know the way you look just becomes your normal again, and you don't realize what you look like before. Well, that's what I've found anyway. I have Absolutely. Things done, I think, what happened, you know, it doesn't look the same, and I look at it before, but I'm like, wow, I look photos better.
Photos in my clinic, not just in hair restoration, but in the injectables, are absolutely paramount. Like, I've invested a lot of money in my system. I don't know if you've heard of Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
So I
knew you were going to say that one. Mm-hmm.
Before I got that, I'm actually appalled at how bad my clinical photos were. But now they seem to be, you know, amazing because of his system. So yeah, photos so important, and it also helps your patient on the journey.
Yeah
you know, that's amazing.
So are there any, what I was going to ask as well is, are there any side effects, like I don't know, headaches, or I don't know, is there any, like
I was going to say DVT from lying for so long, especially an older patient. Do you have like calf compressors or something?
Calf massage, maybe. Not really. Like, towards the end of the day, most patients will get a little bit of a headache. So there's a lot going on, and you have had multiple injections, but generally it's like, you know, it's done under local anesthetic. It's not a general anesthetic, so they're fine. It's a big day, but they're fine.
Yeah, right.
And then do they come back for injectables?
Yeah.
Oh, they're there, they can start talking about, so what about my lips?
And it's actually, it's interesting because a lot of these patients are men. Mm. And then when they come into the clinic, you spend a lot of time with them. So you really get to know them, and you do talk about that. And then, they come back and they have other treatments in the clinic. So it's a good way to capture them. And once you've done that, then they're a lifelong patient as well.
Yep. I love it that guys look after themselves now these days, whereas, you know, like way more than they ever used to. Like, I love to see a groomed, you know, man that looks after himself. But I was going to ask you, how old does a patient, like, is there a minimum age where you would do this on someone?
Or I guess they're,
okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, about 25. And there's no maximum.
Mm-hmm. So you could be 80 and want to get it done.
You could, like, probably 80-year-olds are not as fussed as say a 30-year-old. So
unless the girlfriend, you know, 30 or something.
True. I've not come across anyone in their 80s wanting a hair transplant yet, but you never know.
What's the oldest person
that I've treated?
Yeah.
Probably 50s.
Okay.
Not that old.
I would have thought it'd be like it'd be huge. Oh, 30, lie, 40 market.
About 60, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had a lady about that age.
Yeah. And with the ladies, though, I guess it's exactly the same as for the men, hey?
The procedure is the same. It's not like ladies tend to get bald in a different way than men. It's a different, like the way that they get bald is normally in the parting line.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And tends to be a little bit, because you have estrogen until menopause, that's protective. Mm-hmm. So they tend to be a little bit older when that happens. So mm-hmm. after menopause, it tends to speed up. So after 50, but the actual procedure itself is the same. And quite often, because women have got long hair, you can completely disguise the donor site. So you have to shave the back of the head, but if you pull the hair that's normally covering that up, up to the top, then shave the back of the head, then after you finish the procedure you can just put the hair back down and you would not know.
Yeah.
You would see the donor site, but the implantation site, but you would never know that they've had anything done if you look from the back.
And so can this be used just for hair thinning? So say for example, if I wanted to sort of like fill in bits in my head up here or whatever, could you do that? So say as you get older, women, sometimes you get thin hair, can you just like do it to bulk your hair up a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So we just call it increasing density. So it's a lot more time consuming in women, especially when they don't normally want to shave their head, and quite rightly so, you know, at the front. So you have to
shave it.
What I'm saying is that they don't want to do that, and quite rightly so, whereas men are okay to do that most of the time and it makes it a lot easier. But if you can imagine, you're trying to implant hairs around long hairs, mm-hmm. so you have to keep the hair really wet and pull it back and then mm-hmm. implant, and the procedure, it tends to take a lot longer, but it definitely can be done, and that's quite common, especially for women.
Yeah, got it.
Wow. So Dr. Nick, where can we find your before and after photos?
So if you go onto my website or my Instagram, there is plenty of photos up there. It's one of these things, it's quite a private thing, so not everybody wants to share their photos, although I've got some of the more recent ones that I finally got my act together and sorted my website out a little bit. So I've got some more on my website, which is www.ndskinco.com.au, or you can find me on Instagram at ndskinco.
And do you predict when the lockdown is going to end and you can actually have a treatment?
Thought you were going to say that. Oh, who knows? I'm hoping that when we get to 70%, hopefully there might be some sort of leniency for the vaccinated people, maybe.
And are you vaccinated?
I'm vaccinated, yes. Yeah, I've been fully vaccinated for a while now, so I'm just biding my time to get back to work, because there's only so much golf you can play, but actually I've been really enjoying it. Probably only so much wine you can drink.
Yeah. Will it make a difference to you if a patient is or isn't vaccinated?
Oh, that's a tricky question, isn't it?
Actually, I asked a doctor the other day and he was saying that all of his staff are vaccinated, and I said, are you going to use that like for your marketing? And he said, well, yes, double-edged sword, because
I think he's right, yeah,
repel people who, you know, maybe hesitant or on the fence or against vaccines, and then people who are, yeah, may.
I think he's totally right, because what I predict is happening is that you're going to kind of divide the community into the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, and the way that the pressures on the unvaccinated people they're going to, I just feel that they're going to be very disgruntled when things like where I work opens up and then they're not allowed to come in, because I've got a feeling that the government are going to say, right, you can go and see the hairdresser, the beauty salon, XYZ, but you got to have two vaccines.
Mm.
So although it's not my fault, I can feel that we're probably going to get quite a lot of pushback about that.
He said, yeah. I'm not going to say either which way, because I feel that the government will make a decision and then of course I will just have to follow that.
Yeah, exactly. that's exactly what I'm thinking as well. I think it's going to be really tough.
Mm-hmm. It is a long time though to be in a procedure with somebody who potentially has COVID.
I know. And then do you make your patient have a COVID test prior? That's another thing. Yes. I mean, yep. I think in the UK, obviously being from the UK, I hear what goes on there. So they've got the rapid antigen testing and they are thinking about bringing that here. But as far as I'm aware, it's not FDA approved, so we can't use them yet. But that would be a really good tool.
Mm-hmm. I know for surgeries, you have to be tested for here. Yeah. But I mean, gosh, could you imagine making people go to get a COVID test 3 days before? Oh, my goodness.
It's just become normal, though. It'll just become our normal. And yeah, like you said, there'll be legislation and you'll just have to follow it and you won't even have to, you know.
I also couldn't imagine laying face down, doing a procedure that long, wearing a mask.
Yeah, no. Well, we wear masks anyway. For the whole procedure. So, look, do you know what? Wearing masks, you kind of get used to it. The patient lying down wearing a mask, oh, God. Yeah, that wouldn't be, that'd be great.
No.
I don't know. We'll just watch this space, I guess. We'll do it. We're told, probably.
Yeah. Exactly. That'll be interesting.
I haven't got any other. Actually, I've got one more little question. You know, you mentioned before about the man not worrying about shaving, the lady worrying about shaving. So where you put the follicle in, you don't have to shave that area, do you? Like you can just, or do you?
Are you talking about for a man or?
For a woman.
I think that's what you were saying before, the men shave the front?
The men are easier. Like, the easiest way to do it is to ask the man just to shave his head, and 80% of men will just take the hit and do it, because what I normally say is it's going to be like an hour and a half less in the chair and you get a better result. So when they weigh that up with comfort and the cost involved, they'll shave their head. But for a woman, you have to just suck it up and it's just going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah. I have one last silly question. You said one, Trish.
I know, but I had one more. I just want to know about grey hair. Like, can you transplant a grey hair?
Yeah, it's harder to see under the microscope, so some things you have to dye it, but yeah, we can.
Okay.
My silly question was, does it matter if it's summer or winter? Because I feel like my hair grows faster in summer.
What matter? What do you mean?
Well, like, is there a better season to have, you know, like how you always get your, like, pigmentation done in winter? Is it better to have your hair restoration done in summer? Because it can have the sun and it grows faster?
I don't think it really particularly matters. I don't think it particularly matters when you get it done, to be honest, in terms of results.
Does your hair grow quicker in summer?
I swear it does, yes.
I don't know about that. Tell us, Dr. Nick, is that true, or is that just an old wise or a young wise tale? Or young ex-wife's tale.
Tell, but maybe somebody else can tell me if that's if there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Well, look, I've got to say thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's been really, really interesting. It's definitely given me a whole bit of insight, and I love the fact that it's like a holistic treatment. Like, you don't just say, I want to have a hair restoration, book in, go and have an ear graft treatment. The fact that you take them from the beginning, you hold the hand, and it's like a process, you know, and it could, you know, be this or you may not need this. So it's good to know that there's stuff out there, and it's good to know that there's people that just specialize in it. Like, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. Very, very interesting area, and I'm glad to be a part of it. But yeah, thanks very much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you. So listeners, if you do want to get contact with Dr. Nick, you just got to check him out on the Instagram. So it's Dr. Nick, N-I-K, so drop the C, and it's ND Skin. So N for Nick, D for Doctor. Is that what it stands for?
Yep.
ndskin.com.au. Oh, sorry, ndskinco.com.au.
Yes.
Lovely. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
Got a burning question for Trish and Nick at Aesthetics Uncensored? Slide into their DMs on Instagram at Aesthetics Uncensored. Stay positive, boobs and chin high.